2004, a week after a massive tornado hit Joplin, Missouri. Mike O'Connell, spokesman for the Missouri Department of Public Safety, told the Associated Press that the number of unaccounted just dropped to 40 because of the latest deceased whose next of kin had been notified. The number had stood around 100. Almost 130 people have been reported killed in last Sunday's storms. The tornado and EF5 packing 200 mile per hour winds injured more than 900. Tallying and identifying the dead and the missing has proven confusing for authorities and loved ones. Higher copays and the rolling back of health insurance coverage for state employees to cut costs is being imposed by some states. But Connecticut officials want workers to get a colonoscopy. They also want them to get a mammogram, an annual physical, and to take their diabetes medication. The effort is part of a proposed program that's a key component in a tentative labor savings and concessions agreement reached between state union leaders and the governor. For the latest news and analysis, log on to IRNUSANews.com.
News reports say that the price of gas in the U.S. may go up to $4 or more a gallon. That's pretty scary news for the family budget. But when you consider that many parents in third world countries don't even know what they're going to feed their children tomorrow, it takes on a different perspective. Now there's a way to help solve the problem. Get on your computer and go to USAGoodness.com. Information on how to start a home business. Your money, your time, while money, food, start USAGoodness.com or call 800.
End Medicare as we know it. Ed Donahue, Washington.
A major defense contractor says it was the victim of a cyber attack, but its secrets are safe. Correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Lockheed Martin says it has come under a significant and tenacious cyber attack. The company issued a statement saying its security team detected the threat quickly and that no customer, program, or employee personal data has been compromised. The Department of Homeland Security is also involved and says it, along with the Defense Department, are trying to determine the extent of the data breach. The Pentagon says the impact on its operation is minimal. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
With IRN USA Radio News, I'm Jordan Hooker.
Thomas Jefferson once wrote, "The price of freedom is eternal vigilance." All over the world today, people are fighting for their freedom, to pursue their dreams, to live without oppression and tyranny, to protest openly for their beliefs. At the Washington Examiner, we know that freedom isn't free. That's why we celebrate freedom every day. Join us at WashingtonExaminer.com.
If there's a few hungry tummies on the patio, it's a summer party.
Sam's Club member Christy Fowler.
Steaks, sodas, snacks. Sam's Club is ready with everything, so I'm ready for anything.
From hand-cut meats to fresh produce, simple summer meals to easy entertaining ideas, Sam's Club has the highest quality at low members-only prices. Not a member? Join now through June 5th. Get 10 weeks of savings for...
Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. We have a great hour set up for you today. Did you see any of those amazing photographs that were published of German shepherds training for military action? These came out just a few weeks ago when the killing of bin Laden was announced. There's this one picture of a human skydiver with a dog literally strapped to his chest, both he and the dog in full military gear and wearing oxygen masks. Then there's this another amazing photograph looking out of the back of a military helicopter from which a diver and his dog have just leapt into the air heading toward the sea. Now, We don't know exactly how dogs were used in the assassination of bin Laden, but it does make you wonder about all the ways that dogs are put to work, doesn't it? So would you believe that dogs are teaching kids to read? Well, more about that later in the show. And here's a fact for you to think about. 70% of cats that enter our nation's shelters never make it out alive. 70%. Feral or community cats have even less of a chance. Well, the good news is there's a solution to this problem, and that is called Trap, Neuter, Return. And on our prior Animals Today show, we have spoken about the importance of Trap, Neuter, Return, which aims to keep feral cats out of the shelter system. Well, later in the show, we're going to be speaking to the national campaign specialist from Best Friends Animal Society, Shelley Cotter, who travels the country conducting intensive boot camp training sessions for communities who need help dealing with cat overpopulation. And she's coming to Palm Springs, California, Saturday, June 4th, and I'll give you more information about that later in the show. But first, what has happened to the animals in Japan following the horrible earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear disaster? The story is no longer in the headlines, but you've probably heard that containing the radiation has been a big problem in Japan. In fact, there's a large zone that has been evacuated around the disintegrating reactors due to radiation. But what is happening to the animals in the area? I'm delighted to welcome Dr. Dick Green, who is currently the Emergency Relief Manager for Disasters at the International Fund for Animal Welfare. That's IFAW, I-F-A-W. He and his teams responded to disasters around the world, and they have rescued thousands of animals in doing so. Recent responses include typhoons in Taiwan and the Philippines, volcanoes in the Philippines and Iceland, and the Haiti earthquake. Dr. Green and IFAW have been working on the Japan disaster, and he is with us now to give us a firsthand account. Welcome, Dr. Green.
Thank you.
Dr. Green, you have walked the ground affected by the quake and tsunami. Please describe the devastation you witnessed.
Oh, golly. You know, as you mentioned, I do, I guess when you are directing disaster operations for a living, you get a chance to see just about everything. I think I've done somewhere around 125 disasters in the last 15 years. So, you get to the point where you think there's not much that could surprise you, and yet I was so awestruck, especially as we came around the corner and we stood at the point where all of that CNN footage that we all were glued to, when you actually saw that destruction, it made me speechless. I just couldn't really even begin to explain the type of destruction. You know, here in the United States in the last several days, we've seen this incredible tornadic activity where swaths are taken out, and that's what it reminded me of, is where an entire swath, 1, 2, 3 kilometers back from the ocean's edge, was completely gone. Everything in its way was completely erased, and there was just no way, in my mind, there was no way that an animal could have survived that. You know, not only from the incredible force of the earthquake itself, but then the doggone tsunami. I mean, really, Japan is so advanced in their architectural requirements, and everything is earthquake proof when it's built. They would have fared reasonably well with one of the largest earthquakes of all time if it had not been for the tsunami. The tsunami was absolutely leveling, and I don't think anybody could really articulate the damage that it did.
Now, there are three elements to the disaster: the quake, the tsunami, and now the radiation.
Right.
Can you briefly tell us what are the effects of each of those on animals in the region?
Yeah, and as I mentioned, the earthquake itself always creates challenges for us. You know, we just finished up about 15 months in Haiti, prior to that in Chile, and so we're used to, and prior to that, I guess the next big one was the earthquake in China. You know, in those, it's usually a matter of search and rescue, trying to put together a very organized method for going in and finding animals. But it's a fairly straightforward, I mean, it takes some expertise, obviously, in confined space and trench rescue and compromised structure, but we have that training and we can do that. And as long as there is equipment there to get that off, you can get to the animals. And, of course, when you have large destruction, as we saw in Haiti, then we have a very large population of animals that are now no longer have a home. So there are some unique challenges, but certainly ones that, we deal with on a regular basis. When you start getting into tsunamis, animals typically don't survive a tsunami. But interestingly, when we did the tsunami in Southeast Asia in 2004, we noticed that much of the wildlife survived. It was almost as if they had a pre-warning that the tsunami was coming. And we're seeing a little bit of that in Japan, that, the wildlife seemed to have escaped a lot of the destruction. But the companion animals, you know, especially the animals in the house, there was just no way that they were going to be able to, outrun that. So in each case, whether it's a tsunami or an earthquake or now within the radiation, there are unique challenges that we confront and that we develop a plan for. But what we don't do typically is have a situation in Japan where all three of them have compounded. It's almost like, you know, there, it has gone from a linear relationship to an exponential relationship because one has compounded the factors before it.
Now, Dr. Green, you visited the Fukushima Wildlife Rehabilitation Center where Dr. Toshio Mizuguchi is executive director. What did you learn there, and what are the concerns voiced by Dr. Mizuguchi?
You know, first off, if I could backtrack just a little bit.
Sure.
Part of that assessment process is we try to meet, first off, we try to get a visual of as much of the impacted area as we can. And of course, if you're doing that by car, that takes some time. We, you know, if you can get a helicopter, that obviously goes a little bit quicker. So the first thing that we were doing was trying to first get an impact. And then as we do that, we try to visit with all of those folks that have a vested interest in the animals in that impacted area. So we were meeting with local animal rescue folks. We were meeting with wildlife experts. We were meeting with livestock. We were trying to meet with environment and agriculture and really trying to get the, complete size up so that we could figure out what is the best way that IFAW can support this recovery process. As part of that assessment, we certainly were very interested because IFAW has always had a great interest in wildlife. We wanted to see what was being done with wildlife, and the biggest issue with wildlife was the radiation exposure. So the primary really, I guess you could say the lead agency in Fukushima is the Fukushima Wildlife Rehabilitation Center. So we, really wanted to make sure that we had a chance to meet with them. And as we sat down and we started talking about, you know, what is the best way that IFAW can support the wildlife that were impacted by this, we started brainstorming and we started saying, well, this is an opportunity for us to do some monitoring and some surveying, and this is a way for us to really track the impact. As, we have animals brought into the rehabilitation center, we now have subjects that we can actually measure and try to do an assessment on what has been the impact. But what was most amazing that came out of that is we were all sitting around saying, you know what, we really don't know a heck of a lot about radiation. I mean, the scientists can tell us what the impact of a particular isotope is, I guess, but we really don't have a lot of information on what the impact is on, animals. We really don't know how to decontaminate them. We really don't know about sheltering them. We don't know a heck of a lot in terms of the viability of a an animal whose product is, coming to the folks in Japan, i.e., eggs and milk and cheese and so forth. And we don't know what impact it will have on wildlife. We have Chernobyl as an example, and I think we can learn a lot from that. But as we were sitting there saying, you know, really maybe the best way that IFAW can support the recovery process is to convene a panel of experts where we, find the leading experts in Japan and we match those with, their counterparts in the United States and bring them together and let's start addressing all of these issues that are related to the radiation impact. And so that's what happened. On the first week of May, we, brought these experts together and started to look at all of the issues that would be impacting not only the companion animals, but the livestock and the wildlife as well.
Dr. Dick Green, don't go away. More with Dr. Dick Green. He is the Emergency Relief Manager for Disasters at the International Fund for Animal Welfare. We're talking about the devastation in Japan. Don't go away. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. You're listening to Animals Today.
Every day in the United States, tens of thousands of puppies and kittens are born. Unfortunately, there aren't enough homes for all these cats and dogs. One unfixed female cat and her offspring can be the source of more than 400,000 cats in 7 years. One female dog and her unfixed offspring can produce about 67,000 puppies. Too many cats and dogs are unwanted anywhere by anybody, so they end up being neglected or abandoned. Millions of healthy pets are killed in shelters annually in the U.S. On average, 70% of the animals that enter the shelter end up getting euthanized. Fortunately, there is good news. There's a new answer to this dilemma. We can help to stop killing these animals by having our pets spayed or neutered. If you want a new pet, how about adopting one? You can rescue a cat or dog and save a life. For more information, please visit our website, desertpaws.org. Again, that website is www.desertpaws.org. And save a life. Save a pet's life today.
Say goodbye to your cold weather clothing because summer is just around the corner. With the weather heating up, celebrity stylist Mary Alice Stevenson gives her beauty and fashion tips to keep you sizzling all summer long.
There's a style statement for everyone, from neons and nautical to floral and prints. An easy way to try prints without overwhelming your outfit are the Sally Hansen Salon Effect Real Nail Polish Strips. You can add bold color with no dry time. The polish strips provide an instant glam look that lasts up to 10 days. White is also a major trend for the summer. It's a classic look that's both sexy and elegant from head to toe. If you go for a white dress or shorts, flawless legs are a must. An easy way to fake it is with Sally Hansen Airbrush Legs, a lightweight, water-resistant makeup that instantly covers freckles and other imperfections to give you an even, sun-kissed glow. Not to mention that you can have a beautiful tan within minutes without the risk of sun damage.
For more summer beauty trends from Mary Alice Stevenson, visit SallyHansen.com.
I'm child behavioral therapist James Lehman. I know you need the Total Transformation Program to turn around your child's behavior. But for some reason, you haven't tried it. Maybe you're skeptical and doubt that it will work for you and your child. Listen, I'm willing to give away 1,000 copies of The Total Transformation to the most skeptical of parents for free. All I need you to do is send me your feedback about how it works for you and your child, and the program will be free. You get the program for free, and I get the satisfaction of knowing how The Total Transformation helped your child. Anyone who says they can change your child's behavior should be willing to prove it. We're going to prove once and for all that the Total Transformation Program works for every behavior problem imaginable, and it'll be free to 1,000 of my most skeptical customers.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-586-1402. 1-800-586-1402. That's 1-800-586-1402. 1-800-586-1402.
If you're a business owner and you want to grow your business through direct mail with no out-of-pocket costs, keep listening. More customers equal more money, right? Well, now you can get more customers in your store using direct mail with no upfront costs through foot traffic marketing. If your store does $10,000 or more a month in credit card sales, foot traffic marketing will design for you a custom direct mail campaign with no upfront costs. Call now for free information and to learn more. 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723. Again, if you know that direct mail can help your business grow and your store already does at least $10,000 or more in credit card sales, call now and learn how you can get more customers with no upfront costs. 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723.
Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. If you're just joining us, we're speaking to Dr. Dick Green. He's talking about the disaster in Japan and what happened to the animals following the horrible earthquake and tsunami and nuclear disaster. Dr. Green, before the break, you were talking about a meeting which was convened to develop a plan to deal with the animals in this disaster and future ones like it. You mentioned experts from the United States and Japan convened. Can you tell us what was generated, the recommendations for action, and what were the highlights of the report?
Yeah, as I mentioned, we really wanted to address companion animals, livestock, and wildlife. And of course, each one of those would be the criteria that we would measure safety levels, and the response type would be different for each one of those. And so we really needed to make sure we had subject matter experts that could address each one of those. And so what we did is we came together in kind of a plenary session on the first day, and I basically set kind of the parameters of what it is that we were looking to do and what it is that we wanted to achieve when we left the room. And then we broke up into our respective groups, and each group had a facilitator. I facilitated the companion animal process. And our goal was to identify all of the safety issues, identify the procedures and policies that folks would follow to make sure that they were safe, most importantly, and that the animals were safe to humans and to other animals if they were brought out. And in each case, we basically developed a flow chart so that the folks on the ground would be able to say, okay, if we come across an animal and we wand that animal, we survey it, we determine its level of radiation, and it fits at a particular level, then it would be safe for sheltering. And if it did not, then here are the procedures you would follow to decontaminate it, to shelter it in the field until it was to a point where it could then be brought back into aggregate sheltering. So we did that for the livestock, wildlife, and companion animals. Our number one goal was to make sure that we developed a set of standards that would ensure the safety of the responder going in. That was first and foremost on our minds. But what our experts were telling us is that the animals were at a point where most of them could still be recovered. And so we were really making sure that we were quick, that our recommendations came out within 2 days after the meeting was over. They were given directly to environment and agriculture and to the government of Japan. And our basic recommendation was these animals are viable. We can get them out safely. Here are the procedures we would recommend that you follow to do that. And within 24 hours of the recommendations being received, we saw some great initial movement. We know that the rescue groups want to get in there and rescue more animals, and we still feel that can be done safely. So we're now just trying to get back to some of those conversations with the government of Japan, with the Ministry of Environment, and saying, what do we need to do to push this process along a little more quickly?
Yeah. Dr. Green, I understand you had a chance to meet evacuees who were able to escape with their pets. How are they doing?
You know, in the United States, we have adopted a model called co-location, where we try to make sure that if we're setting up a human shelter, then we're setting up the animal shelter adjacent to it, so that the human and the animal stays together. The shelters, and this is not necessarily anyone's fault. I just think when you're talking about hundreds of thousands of people in shelters, it may be very difficult to do that. But in the cases, there was not adequate space for the animals, so the animals did not have a place when the humans came into the shelter. So consequently, they were forced to keep them in their car. And they would spend their day with their animals in the car. They would go in for food and for some of the other services and then typically sleep in their car with their animals. Well, it's getting very warm in Japan already. They have very hot summers in that part of the country. And that situation probably isn't going to be tenable much longer. So we're hoping we've developed some recommendations on some temporary sheltering, some emergency sheltering, some ways that those animals could still be close to their human counterparts, but so that they are not sleeping out in the car. So it's a difficult situation, and it's one that the local groups there are dealing with as best they can. But I think we could probably do more in terms of developing temporary shelters for animals.
Now, the animals pass in and out of the evacuation zone. So how can they potentially carry radioactivity out?
Well, you know, it's just like, I mean, any animate or inanimate object that's exposed to radiation can carry that radiation along. The idea, mm-hmm. of course, is that you want to be able to take that exterior surface and completely decontaminate it, and we have a process to do that.
I see.
So we can quickly clean an animal, and we've set standards on what we would consider to be safe levels. The problem, of course, is that especially now within the 3-kilometer zone, those animals have been exposed to much higher levels of radiation, and it's now internal. So now it's a matter of how long will it take for that radiation to get out of that system. And all of those have a half-life, and so we've set up protocol or procedures that say put them into a warm zone, quarantine them or isolate them from the rest of the herd or the other species until that radiation level is safe for them to be brought back into general population.
And regarding wildlife, has there been a big die-off from radiation exposure?
Not that we're aware of. And wildlife is difficult. I mean, in livestock and companion animal, we can go and capture an animal and we can have a sentinel type of object there that we can measure from. Wildlife, it's much more difficult. So the model we have for wildlife is that as an animal is injured or if it's hit by a vehicle, then that animal will come into the center, and that will be the way that we will monitor. And that's really about the only way that we have right now. We don't want to get into the point where we're trying to trap the wildlife. They've got enough things going on. And quite frankly, with all of the people gone, the wildlife are doing fairly well. I mean, their stress level has gone down. Certainly, yeah, as they eat the grass and the fodder, then they're eating contaminated particles. And we're concerned about that. But if we could get them out of the danger zone and push them out into this area of evacuation between 20 and 30 kilometers where we know it's safer, then they will probably survive in a similar way that they did in Chernobyl.
Dick, in the last 30 seconds, I understand you're working on another mission right now. You're in Mississippi. Describe what's going on there, which animals are affected, and what are you able to do?
Well, we just left Mississippi, and now we're headed to another one. There's never seemed to be a stop in disasters. But in Mississippi and in Louisiana, what our big concern was is that all the flooding that Tennessee and Arkansas had experienced was coming down the pike. Fortunately, it now appears that that is not the situation. So we were able to go into those two states, help them set up some of their sheltering plans. But in the course of Tennessee and in Arkansas and some of the other areas impacted, we're probably close to 7,500 animals that have been treated by the various rescue groups in the United States.
Dr. Dick Green from IFAW, thank you so much. It's IFAW, IFAW.org. There you can see videos from Japan. Dick regularly updates his posts, and you'll be able to see all the great things they are doing at IFAW. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Dick Green.
My pleasure.
As temperatures climb, please remember to never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute on a warm day with the windows cracked and in the shade. The temperature inside a car can climb up in a matter of minutes, and it's enough to kill your pet. If you love your pet, leave them at home or with someone you trust. Keep them cool, comfortable, and alive. And if you see a dog or other pet in a car, you may only have a moment to save their life. Here are a couple of steps that you should remember. Make an announcement in the store or business the car is parked nearest to, and call the police department or animal control right away. Remember, it only takes a minute or two on a hot day to kill an animal left inside a car. Your swift action can save a life. Dogs are unable to cool themselves the way people can. Never leave your dog in the car, not even for a minute. This message is presented by Desert Paws. Visit them online at desertpaws.org. That's desertpaws, all one word, .org.
Obstructive sleep apnea in adults occurs when a person's airway becomes partially or completely blocked many times during sleep. People with apnea do not get sufficient or good quality sleep, leaving them fatigued, impacting job and family. OSA puts stress on the heart and other organs and is a risk factor for a number of medical and psychiatric problems. What's more, the price to society of unmanaged OSA is as much as $165 billion. Dr. Stuart Kwan is a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School.
If you feel fatigued or tired during the day, it could be a sign of a serious problem. You might be suffering at night. More than 4% of middle-aged men and 2% of middle-aged women are symptomatic. We're committed to making more people aware of this treatable condition.
Visit understandingsleep.org for more information on sleep apnea, a quiz you can take to see if you may be suffering from OSA, and a video featuring Mr. Shaquille O'Neal, who recently has been diagnosed with OSA. I'm Lee Shepherd. A quiz.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think nobody's home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alert, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-866-789-3377. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-866-789-3377. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement, $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-866-789-3377. That's 1-866-789-3377.
Have you heard? Proactiv is better than ever. Stay tuned for a million-bottle giveaway.
Do you have troubled skin, acne? Well, we have great news. With Proactiv, your acne can heal, and you can prevent new breakouts from happening. Be one of the first to try it by giving us a call at 1-800-644-7850. Because we're going to let a million people try Proactiv risk-free and also receive our legendary refining mask and green tea moisturizer free if you call right now.
You heard it. Be one of the first to try Better Than Ever Proactiv Solution. You'll receive a 60-day risk-free trial, plus a free refining mask and green tea moisturizer. Call 1-800-644-7850. This is our best radio offer. Get your risk-free 60-day trial of Proactiv, plus two free extras. Go to GetProactive.com or call 1-800-644-7850. That's 1-800-644-7850.
Family road trips can be economical, educational, and a fun-filled adventure. Twizzler's Candy, known for its chewy, long red twist, is helping sweeten family travel with the Twizzler's Landmark Summer Promotion. The contest gives consumers a chance to win a dream road trip to a well-known U.S. landmark destination, plus hundreds of daily road trip-themed prizes. To kick off the summer travel season, the brand has teamed up with the travel mom, Emily Kaufman, to help families ease their trip.
When it comes to entertaining the kids, create a boarding bag full of age-appropriate activities and pack something as simple as a baking sheet. It's the perfect laptop for writing, coloring, or snacking.
For more tips and to enter the Landmark Summer Promotion, visit Twizzlers.com. Entries will be accepted now through September 4th. Also, visit the Twizzlers Candy Facebook page to share your travel stories, create fun photos, and map out your own unique trip.
Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. As you know, we broadcast out of Palm Springs, California, and like many places around the world, we have a big problem with feral cats. And by feral, I mean that they are domestic cats who live without human guardians, who are born and live outdoors, who fend for themselves and do what they can just to survive. What is the best way to humanely deal with feral cats? Now, the babies, if caught early enough, can become pets, but the older cats are often so fearful of people that they rarely can live in a household like our typical companion animal. Now, on June 4th, 2011, that's next week, Shelley Cotter from Best Friends Animal Society will be coming down from Kanab, Utah, to the big city of Palm Springs to give a seminar and training session on the most effective and humane ways to manage feral cats. This boot camp is being co-sponsored by the Friends of Palm Springs Animal Shelter and Desert Paws. The event is free to attend, so just contact me to sign up. My email address is Dr. Lori, D-R-L-O-R-I, at animalstodayradio.com, or go on our website, desertpaws.org. I'm sure we are all going to learn a lot about how to help these cats and their communities. And it turns out that Shelley and Best Friends actually conducts this sort of training all over the country as part of their Best Friends Cat Initiative. So if your community has a need, just contact them. And here with us today is none other than Shelley Cotter, National Campaign Specialist for Best Friends Animal Society's Cat Initiative. She's been with Best Friends since 1998 and specializes in helping people make a difference in their own neighborhoods and teaching them to take the right steps. Welcome to the program, Shelley.
Thank you. Thank you. Good morning, everybody.
Shelley, why don't you start by describing what feral cats are and why do you like the term community cats?
Oh, very good question. Well, obviously, you kind of described it very well. They're domestic cats that have become feral or unsocialized due to their situations. There's an estimation of between 20 to 40 million feral cats roaming this country. And often these cats aren't your typical, house cat. So they're left out there to kind of fend for themselves. And often when these cats enter shelters, they never make it out alive because they're unadoptable.
So what are the problems that go along with feral cats, other than what you just mentioned? When they enter shelters, they don't make it out alive because they're essentially unadoptable.
Yeah, and that's actually why they often enter shelters, because their populations will grow to such where they
right.
become a nuisance, and people start to complain, and then they're trapped and brought into shelters and generally slated for euthanasia right away due to their temperament. Obviously, feral cats can become a nuisance if unchecked and uncared for. You know, if they're not fixed, they're spraying and howling and mating and tearing up people's gardens and then their garbage. But once they are spayed, neutered, vaccinated, returned to their colonies, a lot of these bad behaviors start to curtail, they get better, and then the population can stabilize.
Yeah, it's really going unfixed with these animals. It's really an exponential growth of these cats, which is really so sad. Shelley, what is your preferred way of dealing with the feral cat population? You mentioned spay, neuter, and return. Briefly describe that to my listeners, please.
What needs to be done is you go into the colonies where the cats are thriving. You trap them. You take them into the clinic for spay and neuter. There are a lot of different clinics around the country that will offer either low-cost or no-cost spay and neuter. You can often find those in your local directory through your local shelters where you can get that done. Get them fixed and then return them back. They'll also tip their ear, which is the universal indication that the cat has been already spayed and neutered. And then you have kind of monitor them after you got them fixed. If there's newcomers that come in, you make sure that you capture them and get them done so you can continually keep the population under control.
Now, some of my listeners might say, well, why isn't it better to trap and kill the cats?
And that's a really good, that's a very good question. And in fact, we've been trying to do that for many years. Trapping and killing the cats has been the main way it's been done for decades, and it's just not working. It's a continual cycle of cats coming in over and over again. If you take the cats out of one area, in time, other cats will move in to fill that niche. They're there for
right.
a reason. They're there because there's a food source, there's a shelter source, and that is the reason that they're there. So you need to just fix them and then stabilize the population.
Right, and not to mention killing is not the most humane way we can handle these poor,
right. And who can afford
scared
to pay
cats?
For it? Yeah, I mean, you're certainly not going to get a bunch of volunteers to help round up cats to euthanize them, but you will
exactly.
get volunteers to help you spay, neuter, and vaccinate them humanely. And no community in this country can afford to round up all of their feral cats and euthanize them. It's just not going to happen.
Now, who does the work when you implement a program? It seems very labor-intensive.
Well, it's mostly volunteers. There's so many people
yeah.
already out in our neighborhoods doing this work, and they've been doing it quietly under the radar, and it's about time that they are able to come out and actually do it out in the open with the support of their community, their city shelters, and their local government.
Shelley, how do you know if a program is really working?
Well, over time, you'll notice that the population will dwindle and drop down. When I first started doing TNR over 20 years ago, there was about 30 cats living around my parents' property. Just about 4 years ago, the last female cat, mama cat, passed away. Because we were able to continually monitor the population and fix any newcomers, over time, the population dwindled down to nobody. So it takes time, but it is definitely the most humane and effective way of dealing with it.
Now, Shelley, you and Best Friends, you actually conduct these sorts of training all over the country as part of your Best Friends Cat initiative. How do people contact you if they feel they want to help their community and their community cats?
Well, we've got a wonderful website under the Cat Initiative here at Best Friends and the Network. So you can just go to bestfriends.org and then click on the network and visit our initiative page, which has the initiatives from the Cat Initiative, the Pit Bull Initiative, and the Puppy Mill Initiative. These are awesome, wonderful bits of information that will help you in your area of need. You can email me, shelleyk@bestfriends.org, and I'd be happy to help you with anything I can or forward you on to somebody that can.
Shelley Cotter with Best Friends Animal Society, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, if you want to learn more about feral cats, you can listen to my interview with Elizabeth Perowski from Alley Cat Allies. It's in the Animals Today archives, and the show originally aired December 19, 2010. And again, Shelley Cotter from Best Friends is going to be here in Palm Springs June 4th, 2011. Check out DesertPaws.org to learn more information, or just email me, Dr. Lori, D-R-L-O-R-I, at animalstodayradio.com. Hi, Peter.
Hey, Lori.
Just walked into the room. Did you hear that great interview?
I did.
So that's exciting. We get to have her in our city next week.
And it's really neat that the community gets involved. So we're going to have, you've got on one hand, you've got the shelter itself, and then you've got all the people who want to do something for animals. And
yeah.
And I love that these sorts of initiatives involve, volunteers and government organizations.
It's really great.
And that statistic of how many cats there are.
20 to 40 million, I think she
That's
said.
That's incredible.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
But, we did that small calculation about the exponential growth of feral cats with the several sixth graders that we gave a little mini humane education course to. And it's really incredible if you think about how fast these cats reproduce.
And how early they reproduce in life.
How early, a few months of age. And they can have, three litters every year.
Every year, and 5 to 8. Per
litter.
Yeah.
I mean, you just add it up, and it's just thousands.
Quickly.
It's really amazing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, some of these communities, they do have, you can understand how people get so excited about it with the howling, and no one really wants to be overrun by cats that are spraying and mating and chasing each other around and ruining your garden. I mean, we have a little garden. We don't want wrecked.
No, exactly.
And this notion of just destroying the cats, that's really...
Oh, that's incredible.
Sounds like that's getting to be old news.
Right, exactly. So you're listening to Animals Today, and this is Dr. Lori Kirshner. If you have a show topic or animal-related news story you would like us to cover on the show, feel free to email me your suggestions at Dr. Lori, D-R-L-O-R-I, at animalstodayradio.com. And I encourage you to join us on Facebook and tell your friends about Animals Today and let them know if we are not broadcasting on the radio in their market or city, they can listen on the internet during the live show, which is 5 Eastern time on Sundays. Just go to animalstodayradio.com and click on the Listen Live button. Can a dog teach a child to read? Don't go away. You're going to find out. You're listening to Animals Today. And make it.
That's the sound of a dog whose vocal cords were cut just to stifle her voice. It's called devocalization, and it's done to cats as well. Devocalized animals rasp and wheeze, cough and gag the rest of their lives. Some are rendered mute. And for what? So a commercial or hobby breeder can keep many animals without having to listen to them. So show dogs will be quiet in transit between shows or in the ring. So an irresponsible pet owner can leave a dog alone for hours every day. Animals today joins with Coalition to Protect and Rescue Pets in saying shame on anyone who would have a dog or cat devocalized, and shame on the vets who perform this inhumane, unnecessary surgery for them. Please speak out against devocalization of dogs and cats. Use your voice. Protect theirs. This message is sponsored by Desert Paws. Visit them at desertpaws.org.
There's no getting around it. The great outdoors isn't so great for your cat. From speeding cars to toxic lawn chemicals, coyotes to cruel humans, cats are no match for the dangers of today's world. The good news is animal behaviorists say cats don't need to go outside to be happy. Your family will be happier and much healthier, too, without the ticks, fleas, diseases, and the dead critters that outdoor cats bring their owners. And you'll never have to explain to a sobbing child who or what hurt her pet or why he hasn't come home. For starters, don't let your kitten out. He won't miss what he doesn't know. But even adult cats can adapt to life indoors. The key is to provide attention, exercise, and a stimulating environment. Play with your cat. You can hide toys around the house, too. Just make sure there are no detachable parts that can be swallowed. Is he still wanting to get out? Consult an animal behaviorist for more tips. Animals Today urges you, don't give up. Right now, today, you can protect your cat from becoming a tragic statistic. Tomorrow may be too late.
I'm child behavioral therapist James Lehman. I know you need the Total Transformation Program to turn around your child's behavior, but for some reason you haven't tried it. Maybe you're skeptical and doubt that it will work for you and your child. Listen, I'm willing to give away 1,000 copies of the Total Transformation to the most skeptical of parents for free. All I need you to do is send me your feedback about how it works for you and your child, and the program will be free. You get the program for free, and I get the satisfaction of knowing how the Total Transformation helped your child. Anyone who says they can change your child's behavior should be willing to prove it. We're going to prove once and for all that the Total Transformation Program works for every behavior problem imaginable, and it'll be free to 1,000 of my most skeptical customers.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-586-1402. 1-800-586-1402. That's 1-800-586-1402. 1-800-586-1402.
If you're a business owner and you want to grow your business through direct mail with no out-of-pocket costs, keep listening. More customers equal more money, right? Well, now you can get more customers in your store using direct mail with no upfront costs through foot traffic marketing. If your store does $10,000 or more a month in credit card sales, foot traffic marketing will design for you a custom direct mail campaign with no upfront costs. Call now for free information and to learn more. 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723. Again, if you know that direct mail can help your business grow and your store already does at least $10,000 or more in credit card sales, call now and learn how you can get more customers with no upfront costs. 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723. 800-721-6723.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think nobody's home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alert, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-866-789-3377. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-866-789-3377. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement, $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-866-789-3377. That's 1-866-789-3377.
the show. I recently met our next guest at the recent Orange County Pet Expo, and since it involves a new use for dogs, or you might say a new activity involving dogs and children, I wanted to learn more. Josie Gavieras is the creator of BARC, which stands for Beach Animals Reading with Kids, which provides therapy dogs to schools and libraries. Welcome to the program, Josie.
Thank you. Good morning.
Josie, explain the concept of kids learning to read alongside dogs.
Well, the whole idea is that kids need to practice reading out loud, but many of them don't like to stand up in front of their peers. If they read to a calm, non-judgmental dog, all the fear goes away. The dog takes all the pressure off of them.
Right. So they feel less embarrassed or afraid, or if they pronounce the wrong word, it's okay.
Right. There's nobody to judge them, nobody to laugh at them.
You know, I've seen some of your photos of kids laying on the ground with their books next to the dogs. It's very charming, Josie. Is there any evidence that this works? Do the children learn to read better than without the dogs there?
There is. UC Davis did a study, and they found that kids in reading dog programs increase their reading skills by 12 to 20% over children who are not in a reading dog program. However, we could have told them that. We've seen the difference in the kids, and we've heard from the teachers and the parents. Not only are they increasing their reading skills, but their self-confidence goes up.
Oh, it's very sweet. Is it difficult getting the dogs into schools in terms of safety concerns?
No, all of our dogs go through a 15-point test to make sure that they are safe in all situations, all conditions, and that we feel that it's going to be okay for them. Therefore, we have an insurance program, and so most schools and libraries, because we have the insurance and our attested therapy program, will let us in. There's a couple that won't, but most of them do.
Where do the dogs who work for BARC come from?
Most of the dogs are just family dogs, live with regular dogs that just have a really nice temperament and have no problem being around. In fact, enjoy being around people and specifically children.
Josie, do you think the dogs like what they're doing, or would they rather be home?
I think the dogs love what they're doing. Within 2 to 3 weeks of a new team starting, they'll give me a call and say, boy, we turned the corner to the school today and the dog stood up and just started wagging his tail. Or, you know, put the BARC scarf on this morning and said, we're going to go see the kids, and the dog ran out the door and was waiting to get in the car. I think they really know that for the next hour, hour and a half, it's all about the dog, because now the dog's going to get attention from not only the children, but from the ladies working in the office at the school and the crossing guard or at the library, all the people that come through. The dog is just the star for the next hour and a half. I think they love it.
That's great. So obviously the children are benefiting from this, which is wonderful. Do you think, and do you often give a lesson of humane education to the children so that the dogs benefit too?
Absolutely. We do teach them humane education, starting with how to approach a dog. And then we go into the major things to taking care of their pet. They need the type of food, whether it's a dog or cat or bunny or whatever, fresh water every day, shelter, exercise, vaccinations, love, and we do promote spay-neuter also.
Wonderful.
So
do you think this
is learning all about it?
Right. That's great, Josie. Do you think this is or is going to be a growing practice, having kids reading to dogs?
Well, I think it already has been. We started 4 years ago, and really nobody knew what it was about. It took me 10 schools, calling 10 schools to even find our first one. And now, 4 years later, we don't have enough dogs to supply all the schools and libraries that are looking for us. I think people are understanding the benefits of working with the dogs and how much they can bring to these children.
Josie Gavieras with BARC, that's Beach Animals Reading with Kids. ReadingDogs.org is the website. Josie, thank you for coming on Animals Today.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being interested in us.
Peter.
What determination. You go to 10 schools and they say no to want to wake up and go to the 11th school. I mean, you have to be confident and tireless, and you got to admire that.
Exactly. You know, when we were at the Pet Expo in Orange County a month or so ago, we saw this in action. There was a child reading out loud. I guess it was the mother that was standing over there, but the child was reading out loud.
Lying on the ground on a blanket.
Right.
The dog's twice as big as the kid.
Right, and the dog's just lying there right next to the child, looking at the child.
Right.
Listening.
Right. It was pretty cute.
It is sweet, and I do think there's something to this, and I do believe that there is some statistics that show maybe kids do learn to read better or faster or, you know, earlier. Who knows?
Yeah. You know, we on the show, we do talk about dogs at work and the things that dogs do and cats. I've seen cats, you know, cats in bookstores and stuff like that.
Right, right.
But all the things that we ask dogs to do, some that they obviously love and some where their lives are in danger, like fighting dogs or police dogs or war dogs.
Yeah.
It's interesting how we as people interact with the canines.
But it was nice to hear from Josie that the dogs get a lot out of this too.
It sounds that way.
It sounds like they really look forward to teaching the kids.
You know, there's another phenomenon that you may not know about that I want to tell you and the listeners, and that is, you know, dogs, therapy dogs are being used by kids with autism and mild forms of autism like Asperger's, right? And so they have their therapy dogs in class with them to calm them down, and it's becoming much, much more common. Well, there's some pushback from the parents of the kids with allergies. So now the allergic kids are in conflict with the autistic kids. So I think that's going to be actually I know you're chuckling, but it's going to be a greater issue as time goes by. If every anxious child or every truly diagnosed child with a dog, and then you've got the kids with allergies, I sense trouble.
I understand what you're saying, but do most of these kids really have allergies?
Well,
and are the allergic? Well, that's an issue.
They have allergy lawyers.
That's right. Good point. Thank you, Peter.
All right.
Okay, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.